Joining us on the phone today, Jim Messina, who's going to be performing a couple of performances in Carmel at the Warehouse coming up Saturday, October 15th. Jim, so good to talk to you today.
It's very nice. It's a little early for me, but that's all right. I needed to get up and happen this morning anyway.
I was just getting ready to ask, where are we waking you up today?
Well, you're waking me up in Central California, in the wine country, so I'm... It's 7:45 for me, or 50, something like that.
Well, you're our idol then today, truly, because you are making a sacrifice to get up early. But you know something, Jim, in all honesty, I think a lot of the WJJK listeners, they are going to be in for a treat to come out and spend with you, as I said, that Saturday evening. Going back in time, going down the road of Buffalo Springfield, Loggins and Messina. This is pretty awesome that you're still out rocking and rolling, man.
Well, you know, I realized at one point in my life, and it probably was after my second marriage, I was fortunate to have a little baby girl who's now 10 years old. And you know, when Kenny and I went out for our reunions in 2005 and 2009, we just took a bus, and I brought the kids, the cats, and the dogs, and done. Should say that we tried the cat, but it wouldn't stay in the bus. We brought the kid and the dog, and you know, we really enjoyed spending our time because we got a chance to travel and see the world. And you know, I worked at night, and we had a bus driver. He drove all night, and we slept in the bus. And the next morning, he'd park it and get in the hotel, and we'd get up and shower and get out and go enjoy the world. So touring became much different for me later in life, and I realized that music is a way of life for me. It's not something I shy away from. In the early days, it was a lot of touring, and I just got burnt out. But I'm really enjoying going back, as you say, in history now. I just released an album called In the Groove, and the reason why it's called In the Groove is because we did it on a vinyl LP. But at that moment when I had made that decision, I said, you know, that's kind of old school. What would be the new thing to do? And I didn't want to do a CD because CDs are on their way out. I mean, computers are not even being manufactured with them anymore. So I came up with this new thing called an all-access music flash drive, and it's the size of a credit card. Looks like a lanyard. It's a little thumb drive, and you stick it in your computer, and you can upload your MP3s. I've got a special folder on there that also has the master files, so if you want to burn a CD from your computer, because a lot of people are going to still be using them, you can get an incredible high-quality master CD.
Wow.
And it's got a video and all my song lyrics and set lists, and it's such a nice way for an artist to have the opportunity to present their career other than just the music, because there's so much more, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and a little different from when you were recording, say, with Buffalo Springfield, wouldn't you say?
Well, we only had 12 inputs, which you know what that means, and
yes.
and 8 tracks to record upon. So,
right.
But it's funny you say that, because Ahmet Erdogan, who really produced the Buffalo Springfield before I did, he would put the kick drum on one track and all the drums on the other, because he liked kick drums.
Yeah, sure.
So there was 2 tracks just wasted for drums, and I only left 6 for all the other stuff.
I think what some people might find interesting, and again, we're talking with Jim Messina, is that you not only are this famed musician, but producer. You have been around studios. You told me even just a moment ago you've helped build some studios. I didn't know you were into the audio side that much.
Oh, yes. When I actually moved out from Hollywood, a man by the name of Glenn Edwards had hired me to produce his couple of his acts. I was like 17 and a half, 18 years old at the most when I was doing that. But after I finished working with him that year and a half, whatever it was, I got down into L.A., and, you know, and they weren't called the Wrecking Crew at that point, but, you know, the Hal Blaines and the Earl Palmers and the, you know, Larry Nechtels and just all the great, great Wrecking Crew was down there. And I took one look at those guys, and I said, hell, I'm never going to have an opportunity to play this good. These guys are great players. They're great readers. And I just said, you know what? I'm not going back to San Bernardino. And I said, you know, I asked Mike Duro, who was the engineer I had worked with. I said, I'd like to apprentice under you and learn to become a recording engineer. And that's what I did. So that part from 1965 on, I was producing and learning how to build studios, and eventually became a dubbing engineer and mastering engineer, and then eventually into becoming a mixing engineer, which is how we make our records still in this day. And it was while I was a recording engineer that I met the Buffalo Springfield, and I was their actual engineer on their mixing engineer on their second album called Buffalo Springfield Again. And when I started becoming their engineer on their third album, I had mentioned the name Ahmed Erdogan. He was the president of Atlantic Records, had called me and asked me if I'd consider producing them because I was the only one that they trusted. And it was a great honor to be asked. I didn't realize how much work it would be, but then I became their producer, and that's how I switched into production, was from being a recording engineer.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And Jim, I think what you're going to find interesting with the warehouse in Carmel, Indiana, so many people are really taking to this size of a facility, a gathering, because it is smaller, because it is intimate, as opposed to some of these large arenas. Give me your take, though, and I've talked to artists over the years, and some really do. They want that smaller venue where you might have 100, 200, 300 fans, and they're that close to you.
Well, there's good and bad in all, and obviously an intimate setting like that allows for myself as an artist to really kind of focus on the real fans, because on a venue that small, especially where I'm at in my career, that's what we have. We have the real diehard fans and music lovers, which I enjoy playing too, because they're so much more receptive and excited about being there. And I also prefer performing in a smaller, closer setting. In fact, nowadays, regardless of where we're performing, I have the drummer set up 8 feet behind me, and we kind of huddle in around each other. It allows for less stuff to go into the monitors. It keeps our volume down, so it's not so loud to the audience. I like playing more at studio volume because, you know, the expression and the intonation and everything is right there, which is what I think the audience loves. The bad news is that ticket prices get pretty high.
Sure.
Because in order for her to run her facility and us to be paid what we need to do to move from town to town, ticket prices are going to come up. But speaking about that, I just want to break away from your question real quick. But We're doing something special at the warehouse, and it should have probably be out this morning or maybe tomorrow. But we're going to be giving, all the people who come there, I guess they call them the $90 tickets. Mm-hmm. They're going to be given a free DVD for everybody who's bought a ticket. And I think I've told her if there's any couples, what we're going to do is they can have a DVD and a CD, because who needs two DVDs?
Nice!
And so I think there's 48 the first show and 48 the second, so we're giving that as a special treat. And then I think the second tier, I think is whatever that is, second tier ticket. The first 24 were ticket purchases were given the same deal. And I think what's happening on the other seats, the third tier, she's offering a very special price for couples. So the people who come as couples are going to get a reduced price in tickets. So I wanted to encourage, because I know it's a high ticket price, I wanted to encourage people who do come. And as I said, you know, on small venues like that, you're going to be getting a lot of your fans. So I want to make sure they have something to go away with for added value for their ticket. So
that's awesome. That's going to be great. And again, Jim is referring to this great concert that's coming up Saturday, October 15th, 6 o'clock, with doors opening at 5, and then another performance looks like 9:30. So Put that on the calendar with the warehouse. And can't wait. Can't wait. Looking forward to it. Before I let you go, though, I got to ask you, and this is always, over the years, I've been doing this for a while now, Jim, and I've had a chance to talk to great musicians like yourself. I'm always interested to know, if you didn't go down the path that has brought you great happiness and success as a musician, what else would you imagine you would have done? And I'm talking anything. I'm talking back when you were a boy, when you were even a teenager, and your mind just, I mean, I've had the strangest comments, everything from someone that, you know, thought they'd go into construction or, you know, be a magician. I mean, they just go off the charts. What would Jim Messina do if he wasn't making great music?
Well, my interests before I did that, I think, and it's interesting you asked that question, I used to like to build radios when I was a kid, and one of the first radios I built was out of a toilet paper roll with copper wire, four nails, headphones went on one, there was a coil on the other, and then I had little diodes.
Wow.
And then I would put an antenna on it and hang it outside, because I, you know, was told to go to bed. And after everybody went to bed, then I'd put on my headphones and start trying to see if I could get a radio. So, you know, I enjoyed electronics early in life, and I also took drafting in school, mm-hmm. which I kind of really liked, and I took accounting. But interestingly enough, as I got older, I started getting back into the guitar, because my father played when I was a kid. That's how I learned from 3 or 4 years old is when I started playing. It suddenly evolved as I went to Hollywood. There was electronics in front of me when I decided that, you know, maybe I'm not going to be able to be a successful musician. So that desire kind of folded into something that I'd already decided I would be. And then once I got into becoming a producer, you'll probably find in Clive Davis's book that I came to him after Polka wanting to just stay home. I was so tired of touring. I just wanted to produce. And so he said, well, you know, put together a budget for me and let me see if we can afford you. And you'll find in his book, he talks about how I came in with this budget. And it was because of my accounting classes in school that I was able to figure out how much I would need a week mm-hmm. to pay my I didn't own a house, but to pay my rent yeah. and to eat and to support my wife and gas in the car and lights.
Yeah,
all the other things that I was able to create that, and when I turned it into them, of course he laughed because I think what I asked was for $18,000 the first year, $20,000 the second, and $22,000 the third, which was basically $350, $400, and $450 a week, right? Which I wish I could live on $500 a week again, but
yeah,
I think that your question is really interesting because as I roll back in my brain, I realize that. As a child, I was already preparing to be able to support what it was that I was to become. And I think we all are given a gift. God gives us a gift. And and if we're fortunate enough to stay focused and on that road, and most importantly, aware. I used to think consciousness was the most important thing. It really is awareness. And to stay aware of what it is that you feel, what you're inspired to do, you will eventually fall into what it is that you're supposed to do. And I believe with a positive mind and keeping the straight and narrow, that you will become successful at what you love and what your passion is.
What a great outlook. What a great mantra, I think, for so many people that they can subscribe to that. Again, we've been talking with Jim Messina, and Saturday, October 15th at the Warehouse, it will be an evening with Jim Messina. So tickets
are... Tell me, have you been in that place?
I have, and that's why I was so excited when they reached out to me and said, hey, guess who's coming here to play, and would you like to talk to him? I said, are you kidding?
Tell me a little bit what I'm going to expect to see as far as the room, and what does it feel like, and why do people enjoy going there?
As I mentioned, I think, Jim, that it is a smaller venue. We're so used to, as Hoosiers, we're blessed to have a couple of great, well, actually several great venues everywhere, from Bankers Life Fieldhouse, which is where our NBA team plays. We've had shows out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The Rolling Stones played out there. We have Klipsch Music Center, again, a great outdoor amphitheater. But however, you have a place like the Warehouse in Carmel. It is an intimate room, but you're close enough that I can really see your expression. I can feel the energy from you performing, and that's what makes me want to spend the money that it, you know, as you said, tickets will be a little bit more perhaps at venues that are of this size, but It's more personal. Years ago, my mother, who was just a diehard Joe Cocker fan, he was with the Steve Miller Band, and they played at a large venue here in Indiana. We were probably, oh, I don't know if we were 50, 60 rows back, and she had her little binoculars with her, and Jim, that's all she wanted. She wanted to see him, and to this day, I kick myself in the butt thinking, why didn't I just go ahead and plunk down, you know, $200-$300 as a Christmas gift and get her, you know, fifth row? But in a situation like this, you know, I can be a few rows out from you, and just, I think that's what fans are going to eat up, man.
You know, I forget that. Going back a little into my teenage years, like 14 and 15, there was an artist named Dick Dale, and he was sort of the first real assault guitarist, you know, call it. And we used to get together on the weekends, and the three of us, the guys that were in my little band, you know, Jim Lewis and Ron House and myself, and we'd get there quick so we could park, and then... In those days, they were called stomps, you know, just go to the stomp, because we were all surfer kids.
Okay.
But we would stand in the front row and just be beaten to death by this Twin Showman reverb amp. You know, I see these pictures sometimes of people sitting looking at their hi-fi set and their hair's being blown back because it's so loud. and that truly was what was happening. But you're right. I was thrilled to stand there and watch him play and how he held his pick and I got his tone. I'd look, try to sneak over there and see where his settings were. And you know what? We forget this as artists that's why people come to see us, because they really want to be up close and personal.
And there are so many memories that our listeners have with you, Jim, whether it was Loggins and Messina, whether we're talking about the Buffalo Springfield era, even now, as you said, with, you know, the work that you're currently doing. That's what I think is really going to be a treat, is for fans to be that close at the warehouse to spend an evening with you. So can't wait
for
it.
We're going to give them some Springfield, some Poco. We're going to give them some Loggins and Messina, and, of course, some of my solo stuff. So
can't wait.
That's what this album is this year. When Access All Music card that we will be available there is a new album with all of that material. In fact, I have Rusty Young sitting in on steel guitar with me on that record. So we're I think as this next year, I'm going to start evolving probably away from Poco Springfield and do more of the L&M and my solo stuff. I've been doing it for such a long time, but I wanted to make this one album very special so that all the fans who have followed me all those years can have access to that music as well.
Well, fans still have time to get their tickets. An evening with Jim Messina happening at the warehouse. Information right here on our website. Best of luck, Jim, with In the Groove.
You.
And it's been a real treat. I mean that from the heart. That I can't wait. It's going to be a great show when you come to town.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm looking forward to meeting you and, of course, all the folks that are coming to the warehouse. I will be doing meet and greets. They'll be right after my set. I know there's two shows, so after the first show, I will come out and we'll make sure we get as many fans there to take care of some, you know, hellos and pictures and signings and all that stuff. And then I'll do the same thing after the second show, too. So anyway, look forward to it, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. That was great, Jim. There was a lot of great stuff in there.
Good.
I really appreciate you taking the time and getting up early. Our fans our listeners are going to love it. They really are.
Excellent. Well, thank you for taking the time to do it. I appreciate it.
Most definitely. Well, we'll see you October 15th then.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
You too, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.